Hi, and welcome to episode 348 of No Crying in Baseball, the Maryland Tough, Baltimore Strong episode. My name's Patty. I'm here with my friend Potty Mouth. Welcome back, Potty Mouth.
Hey, how's it going? Wait, I'm getting our recording under control. For some reason, it just went wacky when you said Baltimore Strong. I'm not quite sure why, but I was wondering if you were describing us as the Maryland Tough Baltimore, although we're not in Baltimore. But when we are in Baltimore, we're very strong.
Yeah, we are. I'm actually describing the t-shirt worn by the governor on opening day, which I want. And I searched for online immediately, and it was not there. And today it's there.
Hey.
Today it exists. But do I need another t-shirt? I don't
know.
I do appreciate the sentiment, however.
All right. I can't wait to hear lots about that. Today is a very big day. We can celebrate so many things today. Today is Happy Trans Day of Visibility, Happy Easter, and happy last day of Women's History Month. And I love that all those things can really happily coincide in one day. They can all be celebrated peacefully in harmony. And we can do that right here and right now.
And I celebrated some of those earlier today with mimosas. And I'm celebrating right now with a beer that you brought from the Northern Reaches.
Yes.
It's called Hop Squad. And it's from a place called Brewski, which amuses me because the brewery name is Brewski, but everything else on the can is in French because where's it from?
Montreal.
Yes, it is.
I just got back from Montreal. I'd never been there before. A lovely city, people super, super friendly, and it wasn't as cold as I had feared. It was pretty much same as, well, you know, the past couple of days as around here. On our way up, we drove through Vermont, which was gorgeous.
Yes.
And we passed some honking snow. And I got a little nervous because I know that it snowed last week in Montreal. But we got so lucky. Like, no rain. It was supposed to rain the whole time. It was like 50s, which is pretty decent for Montreal. Very walkable. And had a good time with dad and stepmom and kid and checking out the scene. And hockey's big there, you may have heard. So we did go out to eat one. So the last night that we went out to eat, I was so impressed because on this one screen was the hockey game, the Canadians killing the Philadelphia Flyers. But then right behind us was the Rangers-Cubs game. So I got to do like a back and forth, and I thought that was cool that they had baseball up.
I think you did a nice job of observing opening day, even though you weren't in a city with a baseball team.
Yeah. So luckily we had plenty of time for a full day of activities before the Red Sox came on at 10 p.m. But like, hats off to my 91-year-old dad who stayed up for the entire game with me. And we were both so happily surprised to see the Red Sox win. And it was just sort of like the icing on the cake of a vacation together, which we haven't done in a bazillion years, and having a good day and then staying up and watching the Red Sox unexpectedly win. Lovely. We came back home for game two and then stayed up in Massachusetts to watch the Red Sox lose. And that was a little bit disappointing, but, you know, there's always a new day. And not only did I get Red Sox news from my dad, which is not a surprise, but my father-in-law sent me an email via my husband because he said, this you should know for the podcast. So I'm putting it on here on the outside chance that he's actually listening because it was one of the many, many, many complaints about umpires this weekend. And I don't know if you had any in the games that you watched, but there were some horrible calls in all of the Seattle Red Sox games, but especially in game two where they were losing. They lost 1-0. It was super close. And it was the bottom of the ninth, and it should have been a walk, and it was called a strike. And it was clearly, like in the replay, very, very clear. And so this article was all about that. So thank you very much, Jake, for the heads up. I saw it in real time and knew that there were some the umpires are just, you know, having an extended spring training, it seems.
That's it. And right. There are really no repercussions except for, you know, in the media.
Yeah.
On today's show, we've got opening day featuring new records, new owners, new boyfriends, and old A's ownership. We've got the police blotter featuring short tempers and suspensions. We've got terrible predictions. We've got international baseball. And we've got our first round of results from our fantasy boyfriend baseball league. Cheers.
Cheers to that.
Hey, before we get going on opening day, there's one more change to note. Right before the season started, Jordan Montgomery finally got signed. He's a 31-year-old pitcher. He got signed to Arizona for $25 million for a 1-year contract. He this happened a little bit before opening day, but they didn't announce it until Friday. So opening day plus one. He has been working out a little bit, but he hasn't been working out with the team. So he needs a little bit of warm-up time. So they're not sure when he's going to show up in a game. But Arizona's got him.
Yeah, and Boston, you know, so many Bostonians were watching that and hoping that there was, you know, some reason why he would go to Boston because his wife is there and all those things. But, not in the cards.
His wife is going to Vanderbilt.
Oh, wow.
And he said, I'm sorry to tell you this.
Yeah, he didn't want to go.
He didn't want to go because he wanted to be with a team that's got a chance of winning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well.
So he's not going to be welcome in Boston at any point in the future is my guess. But he managed to say that out loud.
Yeah, not a shocker. But, I'm feeling weirdly optimistic about the Red Sox at this point, about not landing in the gutter. And yes, we only have a few days of baseball, but they won the series over the weekend against Seattle, and they have Tyler O'Neill, who is my new very favorite person.
I bet.
I saw him get a home run today, and of course the most important home run he got was on opening day. I think it was like the seventh inning. You know, it was by the point of the game where everybody was waiting for him to do this home run, maybe was a little bit distracted, but he finally got it and made MLB history with 5 consecutive opening days with a home run. So he is actually kind of platooning with the outfield. The outfield is a little malleable right now as the Red Sox sort of shake it out. And Alex Cora was asked why he started O'Neill over Willier Abreu, who is like this theoretically hot young rookie who's supposed to have a breakout year. And Cora said, I've got a 5-game losing streak on opening day, and he has a 4-game home run streak on opening day. So analytics.
So I appreciate it. See what he did there. I like it.
And, you know, Cora's known for the leaning on the analytics, so I totally appreciate that. I didn't know that Cora literally had never won an opening day as a manager until this opening day.
Fascinating.
Yeah, including that winning year. So that goes to show you how important opening day is. But it is a very good start to the documentary. So those folks who are following the Red Sox around this season, God bless them, they at least have chapter one like in the books. They probably have it to the press already. I of course, wanted to dig in a little bit more about Tyler O'Neill. He's Canadian, and we saw this while in Canada. So I kind of felt like this was kismet.
It's kismet, you know? For sure. I was going to go there with kismet.
Yeah. So for him to be doing well, Dad was super impressed. Speaking of dads, though, Tyler O'Neill's dad, so not only is he Canadian, but his dad was Mr. Canada in 1975, which, and I'm not sure if this is still true today, but at least in those times, whoever was the top bodybuilder, and I'm not quite sure how you measure these things, the top bodybuilder in the country.
With a tape measure.
Yeah, I would think so, right around the biceps.
Yeah.
Gets to be Mr. Canada for a year. So he is clearly a maple leaf off the tree, right? Tree, maple leaf. I'm trying.
Yeah,
I'm really trying.
Wow.
Yeah, because he also is known for his biceps. And he and Jaron Duran have some good social media jabbing back and forth and a lot of lack of sleeves when they're just walking around before the game. In comparing biceps.
Lack of sleeves.
Yeah. Yeah. Jaron Duran has to do more with his biceps than Tyler O'Neill. Tyler O'Neill has put very good use to his biceps at the time of recording.
I'm glad to know about this. Yeah. And I'm going to leave you to pour us a new beer, also from your travels, right? I mean, this one, now you headed south. Or actually, this is before you headed north that you got this.
Right. This was en route north when I realized that when we got there, we would be recording. And did I talk about this beer last time? I might have.
You talked about going to that brewery.
Oh, but maybe I didn't talk about the actual beer. This is the Wanderer, which is appropriately named. And now that I think about it, I did say that on last week's recording because I remember saying Wanderer and when I was editing thinking, I didn't give the brewery any credit. So now the brewery finally gets credit. It is Treehouse Brewery, which was known, especially when they opened, there used to be like lines to get in, like car lines down the hill. It's a huge place. And their beer is very good, especially if you like hazy IPA.
I do. Sign me up.
Yeah. This is not a hazy IPA because...
You are such a tease.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, my
gosh. I know. It's a... I even forget what it is. When I'm done pouring, I'll look at it. But it's also very good. And actually, the guy at the cash register said that I made an excellent choice because I was just like, how do you choose between 12 different hazy IPAs? It's like... So I chose... And I knew Mr. Potty Mouth would appreciate this more. So here we are with the Wanderer, and we were wandering. You know, I was looking for a sign.
Well, at least verbally.
Yeah. Yes, what I do. Okay, it's dry hopped. I got that. It's a Helles Lager.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited.
Treehouse Brewing Company.
So we spent the off season picking our boyfriends, our guys on every team that we especially liked for a variety of reasons. And now, during the season, we're going to highlight what these guys are doing that is of note in, you know, in games and around games. So my boyfriends I want to talk about from this past week, I was a little hesitant to pick Volpe as my shortstop. And again, I gave my father-in-law credit for this. Mm-hmm. So the Yankees have played a whole bunch of games. Some teams have played like 3 games, and some have played like, it seems like a ton of games already.
Yeah.
So opening day, Volpe gets his career high 3 walks, and they give him a lot of credit for like his, you know, patience at the plate, and that's like a sign of real maturity and real growth, right? The second game, he scored twice. Awesome. His third game, he hit a home run. That's great. You know what happened today? He scratched because his tummy was upset.
Oh, poor guy.
I know. It's just like, that doesn't seem like, you know, like upset.
Maybe he ate something wrong, upset. Like bad oat milk. I know that that's...
So tell me about the bad oat milk. That seems like very specific.
Yeah, no. Well, we got back from vacation in Montreal, and it was the next morning, and we were like, we slept over in Massachusetts, and we were turning around to come back here the next day. So I just grabbed the oat milk that had been in the fridge all week while we were in Montreal and poured it in my coffee.
Sure, why wouldn't you?
And then I realized, you know what? I'm going to use a different oat milk for my cereal. So at least I did that, but, you know, traveling after questionable oat milk is not fun. Not fun. So I can
to the wise, right. Do not travel after questionable oat milk.
Yes. So if that's what happened to Anthony Wright Volpe, yeah. Then, you know, my sympathies to him. I hope he's feeling much better.
Wow. Sure enough. Okay. So my pitchers, again, I picked some pitchers from the Dodgers and some from the Orioles, and Corbin Burnes and Grayson Rodriguez each pitched 6 innings. Corbin Burnes had opening day. Grayrod had game 2. They each pitched 6 one-hit innings. Wow. They had Burnes had 11 strikeouts. Grayrod had 9 strikeouts. That they had just freaking amazing starts. The O's scored 23 runs in 2 games, which forced the Angels to have a team meeting after game 2, which worked because the Angels won game 3. Adley didn't repeat his 5-for-5 from last year, but he did get 2 hits, 3 runs, and 2 runs batted in. And Yamamoto is kind of came around from his start in Korea by throwing 5 innings of shutout ball, including 5 Ks. Still got, there was, the Dodgers still lost, but Yamamoto is really hanging in there. So yay for that.
Okay. I'm going to do a quick special shout out to Dad. Dad, don't worry about the oat milk. I know you're stressing about this right now. So it was only a little bit that I put in the coffee, and I could have gotten rid of the coffee. This is all on me. And I was much better, so much that actually after we came home, we went to the neighborhood bar. So it was no big deal. Honestly, so it's okay, Dad.
About the end of the great oat milk fiasco of 2024.
It will go down in the history books. All right, my
as long as it stays down.
My boyfriend. So, speaking of the Yankees, which I can't believe, right? 4 games they did sweep the Astros. Come on, Astros, you had one job this weekend. But the big news, everybody's talking about Juan Soto, and then, oh, it's a surprise that Oswaldo Cabrera was like his number 2 man, that it was the 2 of them really throughout the series that made the really big difference. And everybody predicted, basically anybody else except for Cabrera, who's only in because DJ LeMahieu is injured with a fractured foot.
Ouch.
So he could be out for a while. However, Cabrera blew everyone away, except for, of course, me, because I picked him, right? So I'm taking full credit for this. Over the first 3 games, and actually 4, I checked it today. He didn't get a hit today, but he got 7 hits, 6 RBI, and 2 homers. I know today he walked. He didn't hit, but he did walk. And the key about this, not only is that like a shitload of action, but he is responsible for tying up each game. So each of those first 3 games, the Yankees were trailing Houston. And he was the tying run. So the first game, he homered to tie it up. The second game, he singled to tie it up 1-1 in the 7th. And then the Yankees totally broke out and they won by a bazillion. And then in the 3rd game, he tied it up with a home run. So I'm feeling really good about my Oswaldo Cabrera pick. And I'm excited that I put him on my lineup because he is very malleable. You can put him in anywhere. And now I know he's going to be playing for a while. So Yay, that helps my fantasy league. As well as I'm glad I put in my lineup Jackson Chaudio because he is barely 20 years old. He turned 20 on March 11th. He is the second youngest player ever to bat leadoff on opening day after our beloved Bobby Dorr of the Red Sox in 1937. He's the fifth youngest overall to play on an opening day roster after Robin Yount. Now, this blows me away. Did it twice. So he did it at ages 18 and 19. So he was like doubly youngest opening day guy. So holy shit. And Griffey Jr. and Adrian Beltre. Those are the ones who also were who were younger than Chaudio on opening day. So he started first at bat by getting a walk and stealing second base. Not bad for a kid. His second at bat, he got a hit. His third at bat was a fielder's choice, so he was safe at first, but only because he hustled like crazy to beat out the double play and got an RBI out of it. Weirdly, and I'm going to need you to do a little bit of the brainy research on this. I read that, according to J.J. Cooper of Baseball America anyway, that because they did the contract extension, the Brewers are ineligible for PPI, the prospect promotion incentives, the getting the extra draft pick because of putting him in on opening day. So the whole idea of like starting your rookies on opening day is to encourage people to not manipulate service time. But the fact that they signed him to this long extension.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, but that's going to, you know, reduce the incentive to signing these guys to extensions if this is how it pans out.
Well, I mean, the reason the service time gets manipulated is to put off when you pay the guys more.
Oh,
right? It puts off when they're eligible for arbitration, and then it puts off when they're eligible for free agency, so they're under team control for longer. If they've given him a good contract that's way above what he'd be getting for like league minimum, which is what you would probably start people at, he's already kind of achieved that incentive personally. I mean, like, they won't manipulate his service time because he's got this contract.
Right, but the team doesn't get the bonus. So I'm thinking that teams in the future aren't going to want to lock down guys because they're going to want to get the draft pick first and then do the extension.
Maybe.
We'll see. Maybe. I guess. To be stated. What was weird to me was it wasn't on the three things checklist that you had to qualify for in order to get the draft pick. So I'm feeling like there's got to be something a little weird about that.
I think it's so rare that rookies, because of all the things that you just said, why would they commit that early? It's super rare to commit that early.
Well, he's going to be really good. So I'm hoping that it still makes it worthwhile for the Brewers and all of their fans. Another pick that I was super excited about for the Giants, Jung-Hoo Lee, got his first home run when they were at the Padres, and his dad is in the stands. And I think I put it in the notes. I might not have. Just look up proud dad in the stands of Jung-Hoo Lee because he's adorable. And then there was another post of the family who caught the ball, and they're in San Diego, so they're fans of Ha-Sung Kim. And so Jung-Hoo Lee said, I'm going to tell them about you because we know that they're buddies, and you know, and actually this other thing about us talking about baseball boyfriends, if you want to know more about these guys and you haven't been listening to us for a while, go back into our very recent past episodes where we do an in-depth explanation of each of these guys. And I talked about how they were former teammates, Jung-Hoo Lee and Ha-Sung Kim, and that he also has the other connection of being his sister. Jung-Hoo Lee's sister is married to the Padres' new closer. So I'm excited for the Giants. I'm going to talk about that more. Zach Short, I mentioned last week being excited about him making the opening day roster. I totally forgot that he has a podcast, that he's on The Compound with Ian Happ.
Yeah, of course.
And so he talked about all the feelings about making his first opening day roster. He said at the age of 29, but he's actually almost 29. He's turning 29 in April. And on top of that the Mets is the team that he grew up with. So this is the team that he followed when he was a kid. There's a little bit of family dynamic about one parent. I forget who. Somebody was a Yankees fan. Somebody was a Mets fan. And he went over to the Mets. And here he is. And the other sort of, heartstring thing about this is right before he found out he was making opening day, he found out that his grandmother had died. So he had like this whole rush of different emotions and ended up sort of having to miss stuff because he was going to opening day, but I think feels good about that. I didn't check to see if grandma was a Mets fan, but you know, I'm sure she would approve. He singled in his first at bat So that's a great thing. And then there was this, you know, especially there's a lot of Mets players with a lot of swag and drip or whatever you want to call it, like just style, like read Francisco Lindor. And so there was the Mets rundown of how they were dressed. And if you look at Zach Short, he looks like an NYU grad student. He's wearing like this sort of, I don't know, wool coat, button-up coat, and he's got his computer in one hand and his coffee in the other hand. And
oh, dear.
He totally looks like he's going to the neighborhood cafe to do a little bit of research. I appreciate that about him. My low light of opening day.
Oh, dear. I'm so sorry.
I am so bummed about
You're
this
so excited
because
about-
I really wanted this guy in my team. Royce Lewis of the Twins said, and I quote, "I'm too electric for my own good." So when I talked about Royce Lewis in the offseason, one of the major themes here was injury, and that he was so excited to be making an opening day where he would actually be able to be healthy and play the season. He made it through spring training okay. So he missed 2021 because of an ACL tear and the beginning of 22. Only played 12 games in 22. Tore the ACL again. 23, he was mostly injured, only played 58 games, and this was supposed to be his season, the twin season, him with Correa out there in the infield, and damn it, he has a severe right quad strain and will be missing at least a month before he gets evaluated for rehab.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
That sucks.
You have backup guys, yeah.
And some,
yeah, right.
I have some
all
big
right.
holes.
All right. I'm going to talk about the O's. I'm going to talk about the A's and their opening days because they were unusual opening days. If you pay attention whatsoever, you saw that there was a disaster in Baltimore earlier last week where a giant cargo ship took out completely the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And It's horrible. It's a terrible, terrible accident. So that happened, you know, a few days after former owner of the Orioles passes away. New owner gets approved. Disaster happens. People are excited about opening day. So emotions are up and down like crazy in Maryland. My reference to Maryland Tough, Baltimore Strong is what the T-shirt that the governor of Maryland wore on opening day said that. And also he used that in his remarks talking about city coming together to support the disaster and then also support the good things that actually brings Baltimore together. So David Rubenstein, new owner of the Orioles, approved on Wednesday officially, just in time for opening day. I feel like I wrote his talking points. If I were to design an owner, like how do I make super rich guy absolutely likable and saying all the words I want to hear, it would be all the things that David Rubenstein said. And I'm so suspicious. He seems so genuine, but there were so many of all the right things and all the right actions. Too good to be true, you know how that turns out, right? So for instance, he says in his remarks to the fans, "I grew up here. I was educated here. My parents grew up here. They were educated here. My parents are buried here. I'll be buried here."
Wow.
I really want to say to Baltimore, this is a new day, a new chapter. And he's talking about, like, he owns the team, but he's talking about coming together around the team as revitalizing the city, as like a component of making Baltimore better and more unified. Part of all the right moves, you would think he'd be the guy that does the first pitch, mm-hmm. right? He doesn't. He takes the ball out to the mound and hands it to the daughter of a local postal worker.
Oh.
His dad was a postal worker.
Wow, so, that's
so
cool. So
this young girl throws the first pitch. David Rubenstein does not throw the first pitch, but he's part of it. He was up in the booth talking to the broadcasters, and he dropped public school education. He dropped grit and hard work for the people of Baltimore. He talked about owning the team as a civic responsibility. Like, are you in my head? These are all things that I want you to say. He also worked the crowd, as did the other people in the owners group. Mm-hmm. You probably saw that some of the owners were over across the street in one of the bars, brought beer for everybody, and also were kind of wandering around the stadium the whole time, making friends, handing out
things
to people.
That's amazing.
The guys in the booth asked Rubenstein, "So where are you going to sit during the games?" And he said, "Well, I'll probably go to the suite to eat, But other than that, I'm going to sit in different parts of the ballpark. I want to see what it's like from all the places. I want to talk to people. I mean, he just wants to be man of the people. They started opening day ceremonies with a moment of silence. They honored the people who were on the rescue team to try to were jumping in the water trying to. Yeah. You know, find the bodies and reclaim all. And so there was like this definite up and down. The O, the yelled O, which I'm sorry that you hate, as part of the national anthem. I've never heard it louder. And I was watching it on TV. I mean, it was really a thing. So up and down. I mean, I watched the game, you know, on a screen. It wasn't there. And still, it was pretty, pretty moving.
Wow. I just want to say that this is like next level ownership. Like, this is the kind of thing that, you know, I think everybody wants an owner that's going to get good players and, you know, just actually support the team and try to get them to win. You know, speaking very personally from the Red Sox, but then also look with the fiasco with the A's. But to have owners who go beyond that and are real people, and I, you know, the video that they had of the three of the guys who went over to Pickle's Pub, mm-hmm. and bought everybody beers,
I get it, yeah.
super down to earth,
yeah.
and just, oh my God, that is a dream come true. So, you know, power to, I just think that that's going to make a huge difference for Baltimore.
So, you know, we'll see, like, is that going to translate into, you know, pay the guys, don't have the second lowest, you know, payroll anymore. Is it going to, he talked about, you know, needing to upgrade. You know, we keep talking about Camden Yards is like the new ballpark. It's 30 years old. Yeah. It's like it needs upgrades. So, no, I don't know where we're going to start, but we're going to spend some time looking around and paying attention and talking to people about what needs the first improvement. So, you know, again, I'm so freaking suspicious.
Yeah.
All the time.
Right.
And yet it's a good start. Mm-hmm. It's huge. A good start. So on the other end of the ownership scale, the A's ownership. So A's had what might be their last opening day at the Coliseum. In advance of this, the team, the city has said that we're going to offer the team a lease. From their lease runs out at the end of the season. They don't know where they're going to play for the next couple of years. The intention is new ballpark in Vegas, which would open in 2028. So they're going to meet, the A's ownership is going to meet with the city of Oakland on Tuesday, where Oakland is going to offer a 5-year lease extension with an opt out at 3 years, which would be the time the ballpark is supposed to be ready for them in Vegas. The team would have to pay a $97 million extension fee, which is gigantic. They pay like $1.5 million a year now for their lease. So that's a big deal.
Shit.
But in return for that, I told you before that like the mayor was saying, we need to keep the Oakland A's name. We need to keep the colors. They're kind of like giving that back. They're saying, you know, they're hoping that will happen, but that's not going to be a condition of this lease. So in the meantime, the fans, I love the fans. The fans wonderful. So they sold all of 13,000 tickets for opening day. And you know where the fans were? Even when they bought the tickets, they were outside in the parking lot. They had the big tailgate party. Even if people had tickets, they still watched on the big screen from the parking lot. They yelled their fifth inning, sell the team chant from the parking lot. And in addition to just like those, like the couple of groups that have been organizing the fans, like the Last Dive Bar and Oakland 68 and all those groups, we've talked about the groups in Nevada who are against public funding for the stadium, including the group called Schools Over Stadium, saying, why are you giving all this money to develop a ballpark when our schools need the funding? So they showed up at this tailgate party and they spoke, they raised money, they raised $40,000 in donations from the people who were there, and a fan there said, I'll match that.
Wow.
So I don't know who that fan was who was hanging out in the parking lot.
That's crazy.
So like, that's $80,000 they raised for their fight to try to get Nevada to say, no, we're not going to use public funding.
Wow.
We have another place to put this money that's more important to us. So how about that for a couple of different kinds of opening days around the country?
Holy shit. And I just feel bad for the A's players, though, to be like playing with like no fans. I mean, that place was empty. And I think the Guardians have been there and doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Sox are due there next after Seattle. So I don't know. You know, I really
want... Well, it's not like that when people were in there to begin with.
Yeah.
Because they're all mad at John Fisher.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And so am I, damn it.
Yeah, no, it sucks. It sucks. It sucks. And so just for the players, it's just unfair. It sucks. They have to like grit through this season and deal with it somehow. But there's shit happening elsewhere that we can also focus on. And you know that we love our police blotter segment. I got to put that siren back in. I did that one episode and I did it really well, but I lost it. It's maybe I'll find it. There was a kerfuffle between the Mets and the Brewers, which just pulled at my heartstrings just a little bit, partly because it involved a former baseball boyfriend pick of mine, Jeff McNeil. And I honestly was really close to picking Rhys Hoskins this year because I needed, and I do need, a backup first base.
Can I just say, we keep talking about him like we've picked him in the past and we haven't.
And we haven't.
But it feels like we have because we talk about him so much.
I'm really glad that I didn't pick him so that I can, like, you
this
know.
This is why Potty Mouth claimed this one, because this would be framed completely differently if I was leading this conversation. But please, go ahead.
Yeah, no. And feel free to chime in, because I'm definitely Team McNeil in this one. So game one, opening day on Friday, Rhys Hoskins slid into second base to break up a double play. And it was challenged, and it was ruled clean. Mm-hmm. So he was on the base path. It's the old-fashioned way. You want to break up a double play. However, it's still nasty. I mean, it's still cleats up. Have you seen it?
I have. They were straight. They were straight.
But he's over the bag, into the dirt, toward McNeil. And I think what's super telling is that he has done this repeatedly. And, you know, it's legal. It's a play. I just feel like it's dangerous and it's scary for a second baseman. And I personally get flashbacks to when Manny Machado took out Dustin Pedroia and literally ruined his career. And I know Manny Machado has done a lot of wonderful things since then, and he's a good guy. And I've heard him on Eric Hosmer's recent podcast. Very likable. I cannot let that go, because that was a huge moment and it changed somebody's life. And I feel like if you can avoid that kind of thing, then maybe you should do it.
I'm going to jump in.
Okay.
Briefly. I rewatched that just for grins, because I knew you were going to bring that up. And Dustin Pedroia has let it go.
I think Dustin Pedroia can let it go.
I think you can. His legs were up. I don't know that he could have controlled it, but he stayed there. He stayed there to make sure Pedroia, I mean, he didn't, like, you know, take off like, oh, I gotcha.
Right.
He did not. He was concerned. I don't believe he did it on purpose. Dustin Pedroia doesn't believe. Yes, it hurt. Yes, it took him out. It absolutely did. I am not downplaying the injury, but I am downplaying the intent. I don't think the intent was there. I don't think it was a dirty play. I think it was really unfortunate, and it was horrifying.
Right.
And it was bad, but
I think it's questionable. I think Machado was very young at the time, and he was a flashy new player, and he might have been not, you know, trying to go for it, but not realizing what would be the result of it.
I think he maybe lost control. But if you look at Hoskins, his feet are straight. His legs are not in the air. His feet are on the ground. They are straight. I mean, when you're
right. I think the problem is that they went on the other side of the bag.
Well, how do you stop?
You stop in the bag. Yeah, if you aim for the bag. Well, right. But I'm not. He gets paid a lot of money.
Ahead of the bag. Legal time.
Yeah. No, it's totally legal. I totally get that. I do sympathize with Jeff McNeil, because that's going to be fucking scary. And John Boy, I totally appreciate John Boy. Classic, you know, lip reading rundown, which I think was totally right on mark. And he also posted 5 other times that Rhys did this when he was a Philly to McNeil. So, like, the history behind it, I think, went into this a lot. And, you know, I think McNeil, understandably, was sensitive to it, because it's sort of like, here it comes again. And McNeil said, and I quote, "He's the dirtiest fucking player I've ever fucking played with. We've got fucking video of him doing that fucking shit all the fucking time." And he's right. And as far as the potty mouth, like, scale goes, I totally approve of McNeil's anger and reaction. I feel like Rhys did sort of a middle school move and doing sort of like wah, wah, crybaby. So his big thing was 2 times doing fucking wah and, like, rubbing his eyes. So I just kind of feel like, you know, if you want to get in a smackdown, the crybaby thing, you know, like, yeah, you pussy.
After McNeil was yelling and screaming and whatnot, after Rhys walked away, he's like, you know, he stayed down. Yeah. He got up. He walked away. He did not engage. McNeil is screaming and pointing and flipping the hell out. That's when Reese did that back.
Right. But I think there's other things you could say. You could swear back. You could ignore it. But like to do a crybaby thing is pretty immature.
Sure. But you don't think that McNeil was being a crybaby because he was yelling and screaming after Reese was long gone?
No, because he because it had happened to him 5 times before.
Yeah.
I'm
Team Reese.
Yeah. So the one thing that I think we will agree on is what happened the next day. And that is Mets reliever Johan Ramirez threw behind Reese and got ejected. So Mets manager Carlos Mendoza, and I'm still learning this, claims that it wasn't intentional. Reese Hoskins says big leaguers don't miss by 8 feet. I don't think it was 8 feet, but true that it was pretty suspicious. So importantly, and I think he deserved it, Ramirez was suspended for 3 games. Mendoza was suspended for 1 game. They're both appealing. And then Reese did, and I'll totally give him credit for this, he did the right thing with getting a 2-run home run. And that's what you should do. And that's what the reliever, instead of throwing at him, should have struck him out.
Right.
Because
Absolutely.
That's the way you should deal with it.
Absolutely.
So at least we can agree on those things. But Reese, you know, is not, I don't think he's innocent, and I don't think that he is like an example of model behavior, both with the crybaby thing, and also there's this history from when he was in the Phillies and the rivalry with the Mets, and previously the Mets fucked up and threw near his head, and he did the right thing again, and he hit a home run, and then he is on record for the slowest home run trot in MLB history ever with 34.2 seconds. And I'm good with, like, the flashy bat flip. I'm good with, the pumping your chest. Walking around the bases, not necessary. Not necessary.
I'm amused. I'm amused. I think it's like, yeah, okay, so strike me out then. So you don't strike me out? Yeah, you got to wait for me now. Yeah. I mean, now he'd probably get like a pitch clock violation for delaying the game or something.
Right,
but
right,
then,
right. See, there.
Then. So you gave me the boring kerfuffle.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
I just saw that there were 2 kerfuffles, and
yeah.
I am very like sympathetic to McNeil on this one.
Yeah, no, I see that. It's fun to argue. I like it. The other one was Toronto and Tampa Bay Saturday at the Trop. So this was a crazy play to begin with. Jose Caballero bunted, right? Justin Turner snagged the ball, tried to throw it to first, overthrew it, landed in the dugout. So Caballero makes it all the way around to third base just about. Bobichet's covering third, gets the throw, tags him out. So Caballero is still like trying to stop. And he bumps into, how do you say his first name?
Hennessy's
Cabrera, who was the relief pitcher. He was backing up third base. So he was standing kind of where the third base coach is, and he got bumped. It was like, I didn't stop in time. I got bumped. And all of a sudden, there are words exchanged, and then Cabrera shoves Caballero. And clearly, and it got broken up. The bench is cleared in a way that's like, all right, we're supposed to do this.
Yeah.
Like no one's taking a swing in any, you know, and they're mainly holding each other back and all that. So it was broken up super quickly. Cabrera was ejected right away. Since then, he's been suspended for 3 games and fined because it was so freaking clear. And he did apologize and said, I overreacted in the heat of the moment. So I'm kind of surprised we got out of like this first weekend with only 2 bench clearing incidents.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
that shove, I did look at that video, and I was, it's sort of like, where did that come from? I'm really wondering what got said. And
so they asked, so one of the things I read said, well, what did he say to you? What did Caballero say to you that made you shove? I mean, he said something like, what's up?
All right.
Huh.
Yeah.
And I don't think in this case there's a language barrier.
No.
No. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, really? I guess you were kind of hot under the collar or something.
Caballero looked honestly shocked.
Yeah.
Honestly shocked.
It's like, what just happened? Yep.
So speaking about the Rays, they were able to fill one more roster spot recently because Wander Franco has officially been put on administrative leave through June 1st at this point.
Huh.
So he's off of the 40-man. He's still getting paid. He's still in somewhere in his 11-year, $182 million amazing contract. We know that he has been placed on this leave and was placed on this leave last year because of being allegedly involved with a minor, at least one, as far as investigations go. There is no update at the time of recording on the investigations, so I will keep you posted on that as soon as we hear anything. But I'm happy to say that he was replaced by Nico Goodrum, who is a former pick of yours.
Sure enough.
And who is now a Ray.
Sure enough.
All right, I'm out of beer, but we're going on to predictions. These, you know, you say there are terrible predictions. Everybody has terrible predictions.
No, it's true. It's true.
All predictions are terrible because you just don't know what's going to happen, who's going to get hurt, how things are going to go. I mean, look at the Nationals, the beginning before their, the first chunk of games that they had lost before things started going well.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
It was like 3-2. A bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. They hadn't won many games, and then they ended up winning the World Series. That's the punchline for that somehow. However, we're going to make predictions because then you can call us on it. And we'll start with the American League. I think that this is Baltimore's year. I feel like the ownership magic on top of all of these really excited young players with a lot of energy, you know, if you had Felix Bautista still, I'd feel a little bit stronger about this. I don't know how Kimbrel's going to hang in there, but there's a pretty strong bullpen. So I'm going to say Orioles are going to take the East again. The Central, I was debating a bit on the Twins, especially after the news about Royce Lewis, but I really couldn't think of anything better. So I'm still going with the Twins. The AL West, I feel like the Rangers are going to pull through after their World Series win to at least win their division. And then the AL Wild Cards, I was going to pick Houston, but I'm so fucking pissed off at them for losing, getting swept 4 games by the Yankees. I mean, I know it's the beginning of the season. Like I said, it could not matter. Houston could win the World Series, but I am taking them off in my predictions just because I'm pissed off. And I'm replacing them with Toronto because I know they did very well today and I like Justin Turner. That's my, and I had their pitching last year and I'm hoping that they still hang on to that. Seattle, despite, you know, they were tough this weekend against the Red Sox. It was a tough matchup. J.P. Crawford looking really good. So I'm going to go with Seattle there. And then I am, honest to God, I don't even know if I can say this out loud, but there's no way that I can't pick the Yankees for doing something because they were that good. Unless something catastrophic happens to them. I don't know. They're going to do something.
You know I'm going to pick Baltimore for the AL East. It's kind of a rule. Although you'll see later that I kind of downplay it a little bit because, again, my whole... Oh my God, what if I curse them because I have all the power? So I downplay things later, but, okay. But I appreciate the fact that you may be picking up the slack for me.
Sure.
I also picked the Twins for the Central, although I was close to picking the Guards. I think it's Twins. I do think it's Twins. I went all the way with Seattle for the West. And for my wild card, can I tell you that I very briefly considered throwing Boston in there? Because I agree with you that I think Boston's going to do way better than expectations. You know, these preseason expectations are. I don't know that it's going to be a wild card, kind of thought about it briefly. So, but I'm going to go Texas, Yankees, I'm not afraid to say it, and Tampa Bay as my American League wild card teams.
All right. We'll see what happens there. In the NL East, I really wavered on this, to tell you the truth. I'm going with Atlanta because Acuna is just so, so hot. I honestly just feel fucking resentful because of Chris Sale. He didn't get the win today, but still, I'm going with Atlanta. NL Central, going with the Brewers behind Jackson Chaudio. And NL West, how could I not pick the Dodgers? They're just so fucking stacked. Wild Cards was hard.
Yeah, it really was.
I really, like, I want to put Philly in there. I want to put Pittsburgh in there. I'm going with the D-backs, the Giants, and the Cubs. I feel like the Giants is, you know, did a bunch of stuff. They amped up their pitching. They've got Jung-Hoo Lee. And I feel like the D-backs after last year are going to go far. And then I watched the Rangers-Cubs this weekend. I was just impressed. Even though Steele went down, I hope that Steele's okay. But they looked good. So, I don't know. World Series.
Don't go there yet.
Oh, don't go there yet? Okay.
No, National League for me. I also picked Atlanta. I think they're kind of a lock, as you said, unless catastrophic things happen. Yeah. Like if things are like they are today, I think Atlanta for sure. I'm going crazy and picking Cincinnati for the Central. I think they've got some spark. Okay. I think they have a bone to pick. I think they got a little chip on their shoulder.
They've got Ellie De La Cruz.
I agree. Dodgers can't. I mean, it's betting against the house. You know, whatever. But I did pick Pittsburgh as a wild card.
It's a good pick.
I think they are starting their turnaround. I think their young guys are in a place where things are starting to happen this season. So I think not so much all the way, but definitely I think wild card. So I'm going to Arizona, Pittsburgh, and also Chicago for my wild card picks for the National League.
All right, down to the World Series. I think it's going to be Dodgers-Orioles, and I'm going to go with the Orioles. Because you can't do it, I'll do it for you. And it just seems like everything is going in that direction, which, of course, could mean that it's not. But I don't know. I'm excited. I think it'll be fun.
I've got Baltimore-Atlanta, and I've got Atlanta taking it because they're such a freaking machine.
It's true.
I think the Orioles have what it takes to win, but I think they are running – well, I'm definitely running on emotion. I think they're running on a little bit of emotion, too. And I don't know that they are. I want it bad. I want it bad, but I think Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't know. Atlanta. After I watched Philly beat Atlanta today, which was so, like, so nice to see. I was really rooting for that. We'll see how it goes. All right, here comes the even crazier picks where we're going to do Rookie of the Year, MVP, Cy Young. So, Rookie of the Year, I'm going with our picks because who knows better than us? I'm going with your Evan Carter for AL Rookie of the Year from Texas and my Jackson Chaudio for NL Rookie of the Year for Milwaukee. Should we?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So, I'm still going with Jackson Holliday. That's my last Oriole that I'm throwing into the awards, even though I want so much. I deeply, truly, madly, deeply want more. He's playing AAA right now. He had a homer at his first AAA at bat. I'm amused that neither of us picked Wyatt Langford because
I was close.
Almost universally, he's got the general pick for Rookie of the Year for the American League. I'm going pitchers for National League. I was trying to decide between Yoshinobu and Skeens. And I'm going with Yoshinobu.
All right. Well, he's your guy. I mean, you're on your team, so you can be fully behind him.
Yep.
So Wyatt Langford, because he's on the same. I mean, he and Evan Carter are together. But I was kind of like, I'm gonna go with the Patty pick there. Speaking of also like going with Patty picks, AL MVP. If I'm going all O's, this is so funny for this to be said from this end of the table.
I'm sorry, I was so hard on you before.
All right. I'm going to go with Adley Rutschman. I have a very soft spot for catchers in general. I feel like they're very underrated, especially when they do good things quietly. And I feel like Adley does that, and he does everything. He's switch hitting. He's you know, hugging the pitchers. He's doing all sorts of good things, and I think that would be so cool if he gets MVP. So sure, why not? And then for NL, I'm going to go with Fernando Tatis Jr., who got the Platinum Glove last year after being stuck in the outfield because there just isn't enough room for all the shortstops on San Diego to play shortstop. And he already homered, and he's already been in the news for two pairs of cleats that he had styled. The first, I think opening day had like the image of the late owner of the Padres on it and all these palm trees. It was glorious. And then he had this like takeoff on Tiffany's cleats that were like Tatis instead of Tiffany's, but Tiffany's colors and styling. So the man's got style. He's going to be good. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Nice. Juan Soto. American
League.
I
could not go there.
I know. And he's such a freaking Yankee, but he's so Yankee.
Right.
I think this is going to feed everything.
Yeah.
He's blooming.
It's so
he is blossoming.
Right.
This is his thing.
Can I just put a little public service announcement out there? If anybody out there wants to buy my Juan Soto, I can't fucking wear it. I have a beautiful, like the most money that I've ever in my life spent on an article of clothing is the beautiful Washington, D.C. City Connect jersey that I bought when all the hopes were high after the World Series win, and then this comes out and Juan Soto was supposed to be there for life, and then he gets traded. So if anybody would like to purchase a barely used Washington, D.C. City Connect Soto jersey, please let me know.
Or you can just, you know, give it to me.
I can do that
that's
too.
Okay. That's okay. No, I really think he's a natural Yankee, which I'm resentful about. But I think he's finally in the right place, and I think it's the right time. And we've talked about him before for MVP. He's been talked about before for MVP. I think this is the time. Bryce Harper also, I think it's his time.
It's so funny that both of them were the young stars of the Nationals.
Yes, and thank you, Nationals, for like making these guys as great as they are.
And Juan like took over the torch from Bryce, and then now they're both like burning other shit down. I don't know. All right, a Cy Young kind of fun. So here, I'm just going all O's all the way. I hope I'm like earning points back here.
So much.
I'm going to go Corbin Burns. Holy shit. That opening day performance blew me away. That for opening day to put that out there, that was crazy. So he is clearly back in full form. For NL, I'm going to go with Zach Gallen. I really enjoyed watching him in the playoffs last year. He's got good QHAR, and I think that he's going to take it. So, sure, right now.
So, I want Corbin Burns so much. But they were talking about him being in Cy Young form during spring training games, and I just think that is the curse of death.
That's
I
harsh.
Am so worried that bad things are going to happen that I'm afraid that if I say that he's my guy, bad things will happen.
Yeah.
It's such a stretch for you to go so far into the O's, and I think we're totally safe. I think his health is his safe as far as his podcast is concerned.
Right.
Because you're the one who's voicing it.
This is not wood this time.
I know, but I don't have any.
Maybe there's a little bit underneath.
It's all the way on the floor, but you know, it's a symbolic. It's a symbolic knock. I'm going with Tarek Skibal. He pitched 6 scoreless for Detroit on opening day. He's kind of a little bit down on everybody's list, and I kind of think it's kind of fun to go with someone a little bit unexpected.
Sure.
He kind of came in late last season and pitched like 80 couple of games and was spectacular for those 80 couple games. So I think he might be like on his upswing
right
now. Does
he still count as a rookie?
Oh, no. He's played for years.
Oh, okay.
He's played for years, but he's had a lot of injuries.
Ah.
So this is a be healthy dude.
Okay.
And, you know, you're on the recovery and all of that. So National League, I'm going Spencer Strider. I've enjoyed watching him pitch for a while. I had Atlanta pitching in years past, and I think he might be ready. I think he might be coming into his own. So we'll see what happens.
He's a vegan, isn't he?
I don't care.
All right, I put fun to watch because you did that last year.
We have the same team for fun to watch.
Oh, cool. All right, Pirates. I think I'm excited about the Pirates because they get the young and the old. I mean, it's cool to have Andrew McCutchen back there where he should be as sort of like the elder statesman. Like, it's perfect guiding the league and the young O'Neill Cruz, and they've got lots of fun stuff going on.
Yeah, so. I'm a little ticked at them because I had O'Neill Cruz as one of my guys last year, and then he was out for the entire freaking season. But I have them as fun to watch, and I have them as a wild card because, I think they're going to be a hoot. I think you're right. I think they're right in that place where they're hungry, and hungry means fun to watch.
Cool, cool, cool. All right, we're in the little bit of an international baseball section of the podcast, and just a report back on I wrote first ever here, but I recently found out that is actually the second ever Serie de Caribe Kids. So I mentioned that was going to happen, and it happened this past weekend in Panama. And the Dominican Republic beat Venezuela in the final game 12-10, which feels like vengeance for the big guys because in the grown-up version of Serie del Caribe, Venezuela beat the Dominican Republic. So this is the reverse. I wanted to put the name of the MVP out there because I'm really curious if we might hear this name someday in the big leagues. Juan de Peña, who is, you know, like everybody else, under 13 years old. He got the win pitching, plus he homered and got 3 RBI. So this is a very talented kid. And could we have, you know, the next Shohei Ohtani coming from the Dominican Republic in, say, I don't know, 13, 5 years or less? We will see. So if you hear that name in the future, remember, you heard it here, folks. The semifinals were Panama against the Dominican Republic, which is the exact same thing that happened in the Serie del Caribe, which is for the big guys, which is a little weird. As a reminder, this is for 13 and under. Those involved were the Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Venezuela, Panama, Nicaragua, Mexico. Last year, Colombia was in. I'm not sure, quite sure what happened, but stay tuned for more Serie del Caribe Kids. And they have the same logo, which I think is so good for the kids as the big guys.
I love that it's the word kids.
Yes,
it Everything is. Else is in Spanish, then the word kids.
It's the kids. It's the kids. I feel a little pressure right now to report on the CPBL, the Taiwanese League, because we were tagged in a lovely post from Sean Kramer, who like listed all these CPBL accounts to follow and then included us as fans, which is true, but I was a really lame fan last year. So I feel like I have to amp it up just a little bit. And I won't be talking about it a lot on the podcast, folks, but I'll try to, you know, retweet. Is that even a word? Re-X? I don't know. It's such a dark place. Post things about CPBL because it's just so much fun. How can you, like, argue with a dancing fish head? Opening day was this weekend in Taiwan as well, and there is a brand new spanking Taipei Dome that had a record-setting attendance of 28,618 people for opening day. They actually had more people in attendance for an exhibition game on March 4th of the Yamamori Giants from the Japanese League, the MPB against CPBL, in which NPB team beat CPBL, the brothers, 4-1. So on opening day, however, the Dragons beat the Monkeys 3-2. Sorry about that close game. And I'm happy to say that my Lions shut out the Guardians 9-0. And I'm also happy to say that the CPBL now has 6 teams for the first time since 2008, which is a lot better than 5 teams last year because that was just awkward. There's always somebody left out. So it makes the scheduling a lot better. You'll be interested to know that they have new rules. There's a pitch clock.
I love rules so much.
So you can go international with your rules. Their pitch clock is 20 seconds or 25 with runners on base. Wow. They also added, and this is weird, that they added the runner on second in the 10th inning because their games end after 12 regardless, and they do ties, but they're still doing the runner on second after 10th. So go figure.
Is game time, like length of game, a
They
issue?
Do. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Definitely. Although, you know, if you're ending after 12, you're ending after 12. But yeah, things drag on. So we'll see how the pitch clock affects that. It is a big year for my beloved Lions. Doo-doo Wei Lun Pan is 2 wins away from 150 wins. He already has a CPBL record that he set in 2019 with 142. He was Rookie of the Year way back in 2003, and he is retiring this year. So I'm really hoping that Dudu gets his 2 wins and gets them under his belt and has a very happy retirement. And that's my CPBL rundown. So CPBL fans, anybody who saw Sean's post, thank you for joining us. I might not live up to your expectations, but we're really lovely. So please keep following us anyway.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, you might have heard about this team called the Rangers who won a World Series last year. Mm. They got to raise their banner on opening day. And then Saturday was the day they had their ring ceremony where players and coaches on field got their rings. Their rings are crazy pants. So the thing that I like about them, I mean, all World Series rings are ridiculous with the number of gemstones and the kinds of gemstones and how every number is important for whatever reason. But the cool thing is every ring underneath, like inside the ring topper, they're called, there's leather from a baseball from one of the winning World Series games.
Aww.
That's cool.
Classic.
It's kind of like in a secret place. Now, so you can take the top off the ring. And my first thought was, I would totally lose that. It's not hinged. It comes off.
Oh, wow.
I believe. If I'm looking at the pictures right, it just comes off because it exposes a map of the road wins. Because if you remember, they were undefeated on the road on their way to the World Series. It's got teeny tiny map. That's right. But also the baseball leather, which I think is super cool. So yay for that. Please don't lose the tops of your rings. There's a lot of gemstones on them.
Oh, my God. Right? They are so special. Sparkly.
They're very sparkly. Really? And they've got to be kind of heavy, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hey, we've got our fantasy league.
Got
a little bit fewer teams this year. We always do the stats from Sunday morning before the Sunday games start. So these reflect Thursday through Saturday games. The Tall Boys, formerly the Short Kings. This year, the Tall Boys only picked players 6'2 and over.
Regularly drink Tall Boys.
Yes, we do.
So I appreciate that.
We're big fans. So Tall Boys are in the lead, followed by Karen's Crew, the Sunny Slammers, Bring Back Renal, Bono's Boyfriends, Wicked Awesome Team, Potty Mouse Posse, Patty's Commish Team, and the kids.
Yeah.
I'm sure by the end of the day today, this is going to be all mixed up in a different way. But again, every Sunday morning is when we do these.
Right. So Saturday morning, the Wicked Awesome Team was on top because of the Red Sox spectacular Friday night. And then their, you know, less than spectacular Saturday sent him going down just a little bit. But
yeah.
And I know the kids had to fill out their roster. Hopefully it'll all, like, settle down now.
Yes. Yeah, so we're supposed to go to the Nats home opener
tomorrow. I'm
going to
look at the weather report right
now.
It looks so bad. It looks so bad. So there, it's, damn it. So a steady rain in the morning, showers continuing in the afternoon, chance of rain 100%, rainfall around a quarter of an inch. Monday night, cloudy with periods of rain.
So the game's at 4. I think if the game was at 7, we'd have a much better chance. So I think we're going to show up for the 4 o'clock game, and they're going to, like, not start it until 7 o'clock.
Right.
And I'm just saying, I did take a half day at work because, you know, opening day. I got good-natured ribbing about, you're taking multiple afternoons off for opening day. Well, there's 2 opening days.
Yeah. So according to the hourly thing here, the least rain is 4 to 7.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's different than what I saw. But the important thing is they're giving away bucket hats. I don't know if they're water repellent.
Right.
But I think the bucket hats
hold
are going to be our friends at the game tomorrow.
I'm excited about the bucket hats.
Anything else you need to report for this coming week?
Nope. I want to get to the ballpark. So I'm just going to, you know, break out that poncho and see what happens.
Oh, the poncho. I got to find my poncho. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's after I get home. That's not while I'm recording. You guys don't need to know that I'm not quite sure where my poncho is. I'm pretty sure I know where my poncho is, but that's my main goal for tonight or possibly tomorrow when I get off work hours before the game actually starts. Hey, friends, I hope you got to at least watch some games. If you didn't get to some games, I hope you also get to go to a ballpark very soon. I know you've been missing it. We sure have. Please feel free to find us on social media with your reports from opening weekend, with your reactions to our predictions, with any corrections. Potty Mouth, where can they find us?
You can find us on X or Blue Sky at NCIB Podcast. Facebook and Instagram are No Crying in B-Ball. And you can throw us just a little bit of money once a month. It doesn't take much to be in our fun Patreon community. That's patreon.com/nocryinginbball, and we do fun stuff there. And shit, we have to record 5 minutes for that right now. So we're going to do that. So you get bonus recordings on Patreon and, you know, just access to our inner workings of this podcast. So check it out.
That
check
sounds
out.
Like you're saying how the sausage gets made.
Yeah, this is, that's very, very unknown, really. So we'll see.
Oh, my friends, get your booster, fight the man. It's the right thing to do. Send your game balls to Meredith. And until next week, say goodnight, Potty Mouth.
Good night, Potty Mouth.
So you need to, like, less gain is what it is?
Yeah. That sounds so wrong, doesn't it?
It really does. It's
our less gain is our not our loss.
It's our win.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no loss, just gain. No, there's not gain. There's nothing.
You almost got a little Yoda there for a second.